Beloved Bhagwan, Nansen said to the assembled monks, Old Master O, O was Nansen's own lay name, is going to sell himself. Will anyone buy him? A monk came out and said, I will. Nansen said, Don't make me dear. Don't make me cheap. How will you buy me? The monk was silent. On another occasion, Nansen was asked by a monk, Where will the master be gone in 100 years' time? Nansen said, I'll be a water-colored ox. The monk said, May I follow you or not? Nansen said, Well, if you do, bring a mouthful of grass with you.
Manisa, a life can be taken as a drama, as a play, or can be taken very seriously. Those who take it very seriously suffer immensely, unnecessarily. They suffer if they fail, they suffer if they are victorious, they suffer if they are poor, they suffer if they are rich. One of the richest men in India told me that he suffers very guilty. The country is dying in poverty and his riches go on growing. And he is not courageous enough to stop this growing of riches. Deep down he still wants more. On the one hand he can see the country is suffering from poverty. On the other hand, his own desire to have more and more. Between these two, he is crushed. The poor suffers, the rich suffers. It seems those who take life seriously, whatever their profession and whatever line they take in life, they are bound to suffer with anxiety, with frustration. On each step, because existence has no obligation to fulfill your desires, and your desires are immense, almost infinite. And because of your desires, life becomes a competition. And wherever there is competition, there is anxiety and angst. And at the end, everybody is aware deep down there is death. Life is a misery, a struggle, an anguish, and it finally ends into death, which is simply darkness. Nobody knows what happens after death. Zen is not for those who are serious. Zen is for those only who can take life as a fun. This looks strange because religion has been thought always to be a serious phenomenon. Zen has taken a departure from that attitude. It takes life as a fun. Not only life, but death too. The moment you start looking life as non-serious, a playfulness, all the burden on your heart disappears. All the fear of death, of life, of love, everything disappears. One starts living with a very light weight or almost no weight. So weightlessly one becomes, one can fly in the open sky. Zen's greatest contribution is to give you an alternative to the serious man. The serious man has made the world. The serious man has made all the religions. He has created all the philosophies, all the cultures, all the moralities. Everything that exists around you is a creation by the serious man. Zen has dropped out of this serious world. It has created a world of its own, which is very playful, full of laughter. Even great masters behave like children. You can see this, the sutra that Manisha has brought. Nansen said to the assembled monks, now they have come to listen about the ultimate truth. And Nansen said to the assembled monks, old master O, O was Nansen's own lay name, is going to sell himself. Will anybody buy him? A strange start of a sermon. You will not think a rabbi will do it in a synagogue. Although buying and selling is a very Jewish interest. In no temple, in no mosque, in no church, a sermon is going to begin this way, that the master comes on the stage and says, old master O, and oh, his is his own childhood name, is going to sell himself, will anybody buy him? Before we enter into the discussion, remember that Nansen uses his childhood name O. He could have used Nansen. He could have said, I want to sell myself. He could not say I, because a man of the status of Nansen knows there is no I. He cannot use the word Nansen because it is the name of his old age, when he became a monk, of his maturity. He uses the word O, which was his childhood name. He has again become a child. He is again as innocent and as ignorant as a child. He knows nothing. His using the name O is significant. And his asking that he is going to sell reminds one that if you are going to sell yourself, do you think you will get any price? Perhaps man is the most worthless creature. A cow, a horse, an elephant, even in death, an elephant is thousands of rupees worth, just his bones. Man in his death is so useless and so disgusting that people are in a hurry to take him to the funeral pyre. His family people are crying, and the neighbors are preparing the stretcher on which the dead man is to be carried to the burning ghats. They are in a hurry. Soon it is finished, the better. Otherwise this crying and weeping and this all hullabullu will come. And longer this man stays, he will start stinking. And there is no value of him. You can take him to the market, you will be beaten. I am reminded of Diogenes again. He used to live naked. He was a very healthy and beautiful man. Even Alexander the Great has felt a little jealous. He had everything but the beauty of Diogenes. His marble-like body, his statue-like firmness, He was lying one day by the side of the river, which was his resting place. Four thieves, whose function was, because in those days, almost all over the world, man was sold and purchased. Particularly women had a good price, and healthy, strong men also had a good price. Slaves were an accepted part almost all over the world. So these four thieves were engaged in the business of catching hold of people and taking them to the marketplace. They saw this man, this discussed among themselves that this man will fetch a good price, perhaps the best ever. But this man seems to be too strong, even for four persons. He will kill us if we try to catch hold of him. He looks dangerous. And Diogenes was listening, because just behind the bushes they were discussing what to do. Diogenes said, "You idiots, you don't have to do anything. Just come out. Follow me." They said, "But where?" He said, "To the marketplace where you want to sell me. There is no need to catch hold of me. I am coming on my own. Let this be also an experience. Anyway, I am good for nothing. The thieves became very afraid, seeing the strangeness of the man. Even to follow him is dangerous. He may turn or jump and hit somebody. They kept distance. Diogenes said, "Don't be afraid. Just come close by. You are taking me to the marketplace, or I am taking you." With great fear, they come close to him. And in the marketplace, where people, men and women, were auctioned, Diogenes jumped on the table and shouted at the crowd that has come to purchase people, that here is a master for sale. Is there any slave who is ready to purchase him? There was great silence. The man certainly was a grandeur in himself. Even kings had come to purchase, but they had to think twice whether to purchase this man. He can be dangerous, he can be ferocious. If he can jump on the table and declare himself that here is a master, is there anyone ready to purchase him? Finally, one king dared to purchase him, and he said, "To whom the money is to be given?" Diogenes showed those four persons who were hiding in the crowd, give the money to these four people. They have brought me here. And bring your chariot closer so I can come in the chariot. Now, slaves are not supposed to order kings, but even the king became a weakening of the heart. He told his charioteer to bring the chariot close by. Diogenes jumped on the chariot, sat by the side of the king, and the king was trembling. He has purchased an unnecessary trouble. This man can simply hold his neck and throw him out of the chariot rather than purchasing a slave. I have purchased a master. He was right. But Diogenes said, don't be afraid. I am not going to do any things that you are thinking. I am a peace-loving man. Let us make an agreement. I will not disturb you, you should not disturb me. The king was very willing. He said, I am absolutely ready. I will not disturb you. You can have a part of the palace. And whatever you need will be provided. But please keep the agreement. Don't disturb me. I am a man of a very weak heart. And you seem to be very dangerous. Diogenes said, don't be worried. As far as killing is concerned, I am absolutely against. Harassing anybody, I am absolutely against. You will find in me a great master. You can learn much. You have purchased the only master who has ever been sold. And I have sold myself. In fact, I needed some disciples. Now you, your wife, your brothers, your children, all are my disciples. Agreed. In the forest, the chariot was moving towards the kingdom. Not to agree with this man was very dangerous, because there was only the charioteer and the king, and he was enough for both. So whatever he said, the king went on saying, yes, absolutely agreed. And as they were entering the kingdom, Diogenes jumped out of the chariot, said goodbye to the king, and he said, I was just joking. For those four poor men, I had to play this role. My river has come. If you want sometimes some advice, you are welcome. Take note of my address, this river. And do you see that dog? He had only one dog as a friend. Because of this dog as a friend, his name became Diogenes the Cynic. And the friendship with dog also came in a very special way. One day he was running towards the river with a begging bowl, just like as Buddha had a begging bowl. He was thirsty, but just as he was reaching to the water, a dog came running and overtook him and started drinking the water. He said, "My God, why I am carrying this bowl? The dog is in a better position." He threw the begging bowl in the river and learned the way of drinking water like the dog. The dog certainly became very friendly to the man. And he invited the dog. So whatever he will get for food, he will share with the dog. He was his only companion, and he will talk to the dog. Even when Alexander was standing by his side, he was making a joke of it. Alexander said, "I am going to conquer the world." Rather than answering to him, he looked at the dog and said, "Do you hear? This fellow is going to conquer the world." Before conquering the world, you will be finished. If you are wise enough as this dog, you should rest here. Because what you will do after conquering the world? Alexander has to concede that after conquering the world, I will certainly rest and relax. He said, "Look at my dog. How relaxed. You can be on this side. I have no objection. I don't possess this river. I don't know who possesses this river. But we both live here and we welcome you. There is no need to take so much trouble of conquering the world and then rest. Why not begin rest now?" Alexander said, "I can understand your logic. And I am not able to answer it. But now that I have started my journey of conquering, I will have to go and fulfill my desire." Diogenes said, "It is up to you, but remember the day you die, that I have told you life is very short and the world is very big. Most probably you will die before you have conquered the world. And Diogenes was right. Alexander died only at the age of 33. And his last memory in the mind was Diogenes, that wise man has told it rightly. Even his dog has agreed by waving his tail that you are right. If he wants to rest, he should begin now. Diogenes is not historically very much in the line of great Greek philosophers, Socrates, Pythagoras, Anaxagoras, Plato, Aristotle, Plotinus, Heraclitus. Nobody mentions Diogenes much for the simple reason that he was not a man who took the world seriously. Somewhere he has found a lamp, an old lamp, somebody may have thrown it. So he lighted the lamp and he carried it day and night with his dog. Always lighted, even in the full daylight, and people will ask that it is strange, Diogenes. In the full sunlight, why you are carrying this lamp? And he will say, I am in search of an authentic man, just to see into his eyes, I keep this lamp. Up to now, I have been a failure. The day he died in Athens, the dog was sitting by his side and the lamp was there. And somebody asked Diogenes, you are dying. Can you say something? What happened about the authentic man? Did you find any authentic man? And his last words were, unfortunately, I did not find an authentic man, but fortunately, nobody has stolen my lamb. That much I can say in favor of humanity. Otherwise, I am a naked man, I sleep. Anybody could have stolen. He never took life seriously, but lived with as much joy and glory as any Buddha. This man Nansen is saying that old master O is going to sell himself. Will anyone buy him? A monk came out and said, I will. Nansen said, don't make me dear. Don't make me cheap. How will you buy me? He is posing a question which is very central to Gautam Buddha's whole experience, to be exactly in the middle. Because to be exactly in the middle is to transcend the extremes, the right and wrong, the dark and light, the day and night, the life and death, the good and bad. Just be in the middle, exactly middle, and you have flown in the beyond. The beyond begins from the middle, never from the extreme. That's what he is trying to make. He is saying, good, if you want to purchase me, don't make me dear and don't make me cheap. How will you buy me? The monk was silent. He could not find how to answer it. A man like Nansen can be purchased if you are totally balanced in the middle. If you can show that you are centered in the middle, neither this nor that, but just the middle point of everything in the world, Nansen is yours. The monk was silent. His silence is not an answer. His silence is a failure. In the game, he could not manage to answer the master rightly. He could have purchased Nansen by just touching his feet. With gratitude, with love. But just remaining silent like a dead tree, he missed the point. The master is always for sale. Just you need to have an empty heart. Otherwise, where you will allow the master to live? It is not only Nansen, every master is for sale. But you need the heart, the receptivity, the sensitivity, the balance, the space to contain the master. By receiving the master in your heart, you will be transformed totally. In fact, on the surface, it looks as if you are purchasing the master, But in fact, it is always the master who purchases you. It is always the master who is victorious. The disciple has to be defeated. Defeated in his ego, defeated in his personality, defeated in his falsehood. The defeat of the disciple is the victory of the master. They both are two sides of the same coin. On another occasion, Nansen was asked by a monk, "Where will the master be gone in 100 years' time?" A stupid question, because Zen does not move from this moment, thisness. 100 years. The question is stupid, but out of compassion the master answers even that. But you can say the playfulness. Where will the master be gone in 100 years' time? The master goes nowhere, has never been anywhere else than here. Now and here are his abode. To ask him where you will be is absurd. You don't understand the simple fact of Zen that it belongs only to eternity. And the eternity is in this very moment. It is neither past nor future. If you can be here without wavering towards the past or the future, the mystery of existence opens its doors. But to ask a master a question like this, what can be done? Almost the whole world is full of mediocre people. Nansen said, "I will be a watercolored ox." Just he is making a joke, showing his sense of humor. Not telling the person that you are stupid. But the final result is that without saying it, he has said it. The monk said, "May I follow you or not?" Nansen said, "Well, if you do, bring a mouthful of grass with you." This playfulness, not taking even the stupid answer question seriously, shows a tremendous insight into existence. You can understand only as a child. When there is no thought, but pure innocence, shines like a mirror, then everything is as clear as it could be. No question arises, no answer is needed. This innocence of a child becomes the explosion of enlightenment. Enlightenment is not an answer for anything. It is simply bringing you to this moment with your total consciousness. It is not an answer to any question. It is simply coming back home. You have gone astray. Everybody has gone far away from his own home, searching for the home. In Indian languages, for the people who are vagabonds, who don't stay in one place, they go on moving. The gypsies, those gypsies which you find in Europe, were born in Rajputana, in Rajasthan. They are Indians. But because they could not remain in one place, they ended up in Egypt, and because of Egypt, they got the name Gypsy. Gypsy it must have been in the beginning. Then the E was dropped in Europe and they became Gypsies. For Gypsies in India is a beautiful word. It is khanabdos. Its meaning is a man who carries his home on his own shoulders. Khana means home, bados means on the shoulders. We are carrying our home on our own shoulders, but we are searching unnecessarily here and there, running. Not looking in the moment what we are. If you can just stay for a second, you will suddenly find this is the place you have always been in, but you never looked at it. Zen takes away all goals from your life, all problems from your life, all questions from your life, because they make you serious. It gives you the moment and the joy that arises when you are centered in the moment. Rejoice dance, sing. Life is to be just like a lotus flower. The seriousness destroys all the flowers. You will be surprised to know that in Mahatma Gandhi's ashram, and he was one of the most serious persons in the world, so serious that even tea was a sin. He had few pots, he removed the roses and started growing wheat. Such seriousness that the country is poor, so he is growing in his pots wheat, as if that wheat will destroy the poverty. And he has destroyed the roses. And nobody raised a question in his ashram that this is stupid. These few parts of roses will not fulfill anything. Only you have destroyed few beautiful roses. But that is what the serious person always does. He takes away your smiles, your laughter, because life so many people are sick, how can you laugh? So many people are poor and you are laughing. So many people are in the mad houses and you are laughing. So many people are criminals and you are laughing. The Third World War is hanging over you and you are telling jokes. The serious person destroys everything, takes away all joy, all smiles, all love, all roses, and makes everyone a dead weight. Makes everybody's life meaningless. Where roses don't grow, life cannot be a joy. Jesus is right when he says, one cannot live by bread alone. And Mahatma Gandhi used to read Jesus continuously. At least 3 times in his life he was just on the verge to be converted into Christianity. But perhaps he must have been interpreting the statement of Jesus the way the Christian missionaries have been doing for 2000 years. You cannot live by bread alone. They interpreted that you need God. Just bread will not do. My interpretation is you need roses. Just wheat will not do. And with bread, with wheat, rose seems to be very synonymous, parallel. With wheat and God, the distance is so vast that anybody who interprets it that you need God is forgetting completely that God is a fiction. The rose is not. That the God is only a concept, the rose is a reality. So I say you cannot live by bread alone, you need roses too. In fragrance, you need bread only to have roses. Otherwise, what is the point of just going on eating and you don't have any roses? Only roses can bring a smile to your faces and joy into your heart. But the serious person has been the maker of the whole society up to now. It has to be changed. Life has to be made a fun, a play, a beautiful drama. And a person who can make life a drama, a beautiful story, a fiction, will be able also to make death a fiction. His life will be simply a dance of love, of gratitude, of peace, of silence. That is the whole work of Zen. A great point of departure from the old traditional religions. A Zen poet, Sekiso, wrote, "With your tall golden staff tinkling, you have come all the way down, talking for days about things not of the world. Your words have been all we needed, sumptuous, the colors of the halls and the temple buildings, lush and dense around them, the serene beauty of the forest and the arbored walks, lovely. Our hearts are open, not a grain of sand in our friendship. May it go on just like this in the floating worlds of things. Needles hide in the carpet. The memory of this visit should be handed down forever. There is something beyond happiness inside the gate of this mountain. Nansen used to live on a mountain. Sekiso is one of his followers. He is saying there is something beyond happiness. Happiness is of the body, of the physiology, of the biology. But there is something beyond happiness, which is not of the body at all, neither of the mind, but of your innermost empty heart. A bliss arises there. Mysterious and miraculous, but it makes everything clear in existence, gives you eyes for the first time. Before that you have been blind and in darkness. In fact, gives you also life for the first time. Before that you were only superficially living. Now you are living in the depth of eternity. Your empty heart that was nonsense teaching inside the gate of this mountain. There was a gate that still stands on the mountain where Nansen lived. Now even the mountain is called Nansen in his memory. Sekiso is saying that if you are seeking something beyond happiness, this is the right gate. Here lives a man who can point you to the path of blissfulness, of a joy that is not of this world. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, we hear you say each night, go inside, don't be afraid, you will meet no one else but yourself. Why the fear of meeting ourselves?" Manisha, it is a significant question. Nobody wants to meet himself, because there is so much risk in it. You have painted your face. You have a beautiful mask on your face. You will be afraid to see your real face, your original face. The mask helps you according to people's opinions what is beautiful. You have gathered a personality that is too according to people's opinion. How you should sit, how you should behave, what you should wear. Everything society has forced upon you. And it is a great blackmail. Because if you follow society, they will give you respectability. You will be honored. If you don't follow society, you will lose respect. You will be treated almost as an outcast. This is the fear of meeting yourself. Because the society has covered yourself in many layers according to its own convenience. Whatever it wants from you, it has made you. You have become a commodity, useful, efficient, serviceable. You have become a slave. The fear is that if you find yourself the authentic being, then you will be in trouble. You will have to drop all that is false, and all that you have right now is false. And your authentic being will not be respected by the society. It will be condemned. It will be crucified. It will be poisoned. The society does not like original people. The society wants slaves, not masters. And the man who knows himself can never be an enslaved. So your fear is that it is cozy and comfortable to belong to the crowd. You have your respect, your honor. Finding yourself, you don't know what you are going to find. It is going to be something absolutely unknown. Society has created so much distance between your real being and the unreal, false personality that covers your real being. You are trained as a personality. You are born as an individuality. Now your training is your investment. You may be 40 years old, you may be 50 years old. Now 50 years you have trained yourself as a personality. If you find your real self, these 50 years have gone down the drain. And you have to begin from ABC and against the whole society. The individual is always rebellious, and the personality is always a beautiful slave. Hiding behind beautiful slaves, an ugly reality. That is the fear. You will have to stand alone. You will have to encounter the whole society that surrounds you. Nobody wants you to be yourself. Everybody wants you to be according to his convenience. And they have managed by education, by changing your childhood into a civilized, cultured being, and you have left your reality in your childhood 50 years back, 60 years back, now it is too long a distance and too dangerous, too risky, you have respectability, you have honor, all will be lost. So it is better to go on keeping hold of the false and ignoring the real. But one thing is to be remembered, through the false you can never be blissful. That which is not authentic cannot give you peace. You will be guilty in your own eyes. A man was surrounded by his friends on his 60th birthday. And they were all drinking and singing and dancing, and suddenly the man disappeared. So one of the friends went out in the garden to look for him. What happened? Why he has gone out? He is not to be supposed. He has to be here. It is his birthday. And the man was sitting there under a tree. The friend approached him and asked him, "Why you are so sad?" He said, "You are the cause of it." The man said, "I? What I have done to you?" The man said, "Not today. Remember 25 years back." The man said, 25 years back? Just tell me yourself, what is the problem?" He was a very well-known criminal liar. The man said to him, 25 years before, remember, I had come to you to ask that if I kill my wife, how much imprisonment, and you told me that at least 25 years. Even though I try my hard, you will go for 25 years. So don't do such a thing." Now 25 years have passed, and I am feeling that today I would have been free. "If I had not listened to you, you idiot, today I would have come out of the jail. But now there is no hope. I lived with a woman for these 25 years whom I wanted to kill. But everybody is living with things which they wanted to drop. It is not only a question of woman or a man. But they go on living. It seems risky to drop anything. The society wants you to be very orthodox. traditional. Just follow the footpaths of your parents. Don't try to make your own path. Don't try to become yourself. That is told from all sides and corners of the society. Your teachers will tell it, your priests will tell it, your parents will tell it, your friends will tell it. But my effort here, Manisha, is exactly that you should go inside. And there is no need to be afraid. You will meet no one else but yourself. And the sooner you do it, the better. Because nobody knows about tomorrow. At least know yourself in its authenticity. Live, even if few years are left, in your truthness, whatever the consequences. At least you will be a blissful person. May not be respected, may be condemned, but who cares about condemnation? That is their opinion, and they are free to have their opinion. You should care only about one thing, that you are happy, that you are blissful, that you are silent, that you are at ease with existence. Don't bother about anybody, any religion, any society, any culture, any education. They are all strategies to create personalities out of individuals. My work is to undo their work and bring out the individual in its pure beauty. Your authentic being is related to the eternity of life. Your false being is not related to anything. It is just a cover that the society has put over you. The fear arises, Manisha, because one is afraid to be alone. But my experience is the only bliss in life is to be alone. Not taking any notice whatever the world says, they are free to say it, you need not be disturbed. You enjoy your life according to your own insight, you live your life according to your own intuition, and you will be able to die a life of fulfillment. Always ends into a death of tremendous revolution. Death is no more there. You enter into eternity. Death becomes a door, not an end. But it is a door only for the real. For the unreal, it is an end. Before you go on the marathon race to find yourself, just for the journey, to remember that it is a joyful and playful experience. It is not a serious thing. Cecil B. Belloni, the famous Hollywood movie director, is shooting his new film on location in Ireland. The next scene is to be a street fight, and Cecil gets a bright idea for making it very realistic. He beckons to Rock Hunk, the star of the movie, and says, "Now for this street fight, I want to try something new. You see that local couple coming down the street, go over and insult the wife. Then when the man goes to hit you, we will start rolling the camera. It will be pure realism." Hunk shrugs and walks up to the couple, who turn out to be Paddy and Maureen O'Murphy, doing their shopping. "Hey buddy, is this lady your wife?" asks Hunk sternly. "Yes," replies Paddy. "Why?" "Well," says Rock, "she is one of the ugliest women I have ever seen." Paddy turns to look at Maureen. "You see," says Paddy, "he thinks so too." Farmer O'Reilly goes to see the doctor for his yearly checkup. After the examination, the doctor says, "You are good and healthy, but there is one thing I have to tell you. You must start wearing underwear for two reasons. First, it is more hygienic, and second, it is warmer." So Farmer O'Reilly buys himself some underwear and puts them on. The next day he is out in the fields when he needs to take a shit. So he climbs off the tractor, pulls down his pants, but of course forgets about his underwear. When he has finished, he pulls up his pants, takes a look behind him and mumbles, "The dark was right. It is very hygienic." Then he climbs back onto his tractor and sits down, "Right again," exclaims O'Reilly in surprise, "it is warmer too." On an ocean cruise in the South Pacific, the ship sinks, leaving only 12 survivors who are lucky enough to reach a small island nearby. There are two French businessmen and their secretary, two Italian businessmen and their secretary, two American oil executives and their secretary, and two British businessmen and their secretary. After a week, the two Frenchmen reach an agreement. One man gets the secretary on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays, and the other Frenchman gets her on alternate days. On Sunday, naturally, she gets both of them. After a week, one Italian businessman suits the other Italian so that he can have the secretary all to himself. After a week, the two American executives and their secretary are still waiting for instructions from head offices in Texas. But after 2 days, the two British businessmen suit their secretary so that they can have each other. Be silent. Close your eyes. Feel the body to be completely frozen. Now look inwards with total urgency as if this is your last moment. Go deeper with all your consciousness as an spear, forcing into the center of your being this center belongs to the eternity. At this center, you suddenly become a Buddha, because you also become eternal. The Buddha is the highest peak of your consciousness, the very Everest . And unless you have reached to this Everest, you have not fulfilled your potentiality. You are not born to be just mediocre human beings. Your destiny is to be gods. Less than that won't do. And it is not a question of becoming a Buddha. It is simply a question of remembering. It is your very nature. To make it absolutely clear, Nivedana, relax, remain a witness of the body and the mind, just a witness, because that is the only quality that belongs to eternity. That is the only quality that is your nature. It is not given to you. It is your very self. Just watch silently and peacefully. You are neither the body nor the mind. And then suddenly a great explosion happens. Your witness takes the form of the Buddha. This evening has been beautiful on its own. But thousands of stars have been added to it by your witnessing selves. At this moment, there are not 10,000 Buddhas, but only one ocean of consciousness. All separation disappears. This is the greatest splendor that is available to you. And only to you. except man, no other animal can reach to this point of Buddhahood. It is your privilege. Thousands of flowers are showering on you, of peace, of silence, of love, of joy. The clouds have come to confirm it. Before Nivedana calls you back, gather as much flowers, fragrance, because you have to live the Buddha 24 hours. It is not a question of few minutes meditation. Few minutes of meditation is just a remembrance. Every day deepening more and more into the nature of your being. But you have to live it 24 hours in every action, in every word, in every silence, in every gesture. If you can live the way a Buddha is supposed to live, your life will become a dance, a poetry, a music. Nivedana, come back, but come back as Buddhas. Even in your coming, so the grace of the Buddha, silently, peacefully, sit down for a few minutes to recollect the experience, the space you have visited, the path that you have followed, and make it a point of remembering in your ordinary day-to-day life that you are carrying a Buddha within you, that you are pregnant with a Buddha, and you have to be careful about it. It is a very delicate affair. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes, Bhagwan.